Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jodi Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Hi, Jodi. Happy December. Always a busy month. How are you?
The end of the year. This is our second to last episode of our seventh season of recording the podcast. This is wild.
That is so wild. This year, I feel like I say it every year. I'm getting to be in that stage of life where it's just like, where did the time go? Like every year is flying by. But yeah, it really is wild. So many great episodes this year. So many new people that we met. It's been a really fun season.
When I recorded this episode that we're going to hear today, 274, I had two episodes back to back, which is pretty typical. Mm-hmm. Natasha, our producer, usually tries to clump them together a little bit so you can be efficient. And it was like 100 degrees in the office when I recorded these, in New York City in these old buildings, the heat just turns on and you have no control over how hot it is. And I even had like the air conditioning on at one point. So when I came to this episode recording, I was like so shiny because I was so hot. Yeah, it was like, I had my hair done early that day. Like I made it super cute. I curled it. I made the whole effort and it turned into a rainy day and then everything fell flat. It was just like one of those things. It was such a fun episode to record. And knowing that I only had this one and one more left until a big break at the end of the year was very, very, made me very happy.
Yes. Okay. So the effort was there. There's a saying, dress well to test well, which I feel like kind of doesn't, it's for school and like taking tests, but I like that mindset for going into an episode recording, feeling your best, even though it didn't last quite through, but.
Okay. Well, with that in mind, I'm still in my gym clothes from my trip to the gym this morning. So inside I'm dressed well.
Yes, absolutely. Well. Mm-hmm. Many interpretations. So tell us more about our guest this week. Who do we have on the show?
Okay, this is Dr. Nana Bawachi. And I met her in, I think it was March or April, at the Durham Beauty Connect in Miami, which was a great event. I will be back at it this year. And she is so lovely. She's based in New Jersey, and I'm a Jersey girl too. So she has her dermatology practice in New Jersey. And she's just like an entrepreneur many times over at this point. She has two product brands, her full-time practice. She's very active on social media, very talented creator. And I just love that I was able to end the year with her voice. She's very real. This isn't easy, right? To run a practice all day long, get the job done with these products, educate her patients, then, have a life of her own. But she really did pull the curtain back for us.
Okay. These are so many great lessons for people listening. I feel like we have so many people with just lots of facets to their professional and personal lives. And it's always interesting to hear how they juggle it all. I love that we get to talk to so many different key opinion leaders and different people in this space. Specifically, I feel like the dermatologist space, our network, even within the podcast and with our agency, is so vast. We get to learn so much from these people. And it's really interesting from the client side of things to kind of see how they fit in with our brands and what they can teach different consumers who are trying to learn more about them as well.
Yeah, I mean, through the agency and the podcast, I get to speak to people every single day that are experts in their fields. Mm-hmm. There's not a day that goes by where I'm not meeting somebody who's teaching me something brand new. That's a cool job.
Mm-hmm. That is a really cool place to be, person to be. Okay, let's get to it. Let's learn more. Episode 274 with Dr. Nana Bawachi.
Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. We're a career journey podcast talking about what it's like to define success and reach for it in the beauty and wellness industry. Today, we continue our health wisdom theme with Dr. Nana Bawachi, board-certified dermatologist and owner of Bergen Dermatology, a unique practice that offers a full range of cosmetic, surgical, and medical dermatology services. Also, she's the founder of two skincare lines, Dr. Nana Beauty and My Carite, with her sisters. She's a trusted lifestyle dermatologist featured in Vogue, Oprah, Allure, and Essence. Dr. Bawachi's work offers a holistic approach to radiant skin for all types and tones. I'm excited to get into this conversation about her career journey on episode 274. Can I call you Dr. Nana?
You call me Dr. Nana, Dr. B, whatever rolls off your tongue today.
Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here, Jodi.
So full disclosure, we met in the spring at the Durham Beauty Connect in Miami.
That's right. That's right. The inaugural conference for that. It was great.
It was really a great conference. And then my guest that I have at 4 o'clock on the show, Selena Cox, I met at that event too. She's from CVS Health. Nice. So it's very cool that I get to end our seventh year of podcast recording with two people that I met at the same event.
Amazing.
So this is a career journey show, and I believe that most of us start daydreaming about our careers and passions when we grow up, and we're like, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old. When you're a little kid, what do you want to be when you grow up?
I wrote this in my book, and it's so funny. I wanted to be an artist. And I am originally from Ghana, and my parents are actually both physicians. And I have a lot of family members who are in the healthcare field. And I remember my dad asking, so what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, you know, I want to be an artist. And he was like, no, choose again. You have three choices. You could be an accountant, a lawyer, or a doctor. And I was like, well, I guess because you guys are doctors, I'll just be a doctor. You know, you want to emulate what your parents do. And then fast forward, I had some experiences that like kind of led me towards dermatology because my dad's an OBGYN. I thought I would follow in his footsteps, and my mom's a pediatrician.
Wow. What a trio.
Yeah.
So you have sisters. Are they physicians also?
No, I cried my way through medical school. And so they were like, we are not doing that. She doesn't seem so happy. So they were there. So my sister Akua, so it's Abby, Akua, and then my brother Kofi. I'm the eldest. So Abby's a lawyer. My sister Akua is in marketing, and so is my brother. So they both are in sales and so forth.
So you took one for the team.
I took one for the team. Yes.
I'm sure they're very happy for it now.
Absolutely. I mean, the amount of free dermatology consults and plus beauty care, like my sister was here, like trying to get some mesotherapy treatments earlier. They love it that they have a derm in the house.
And how cool that you had parents, one's a pediatrician and one's an OB, right? It's like this side of the same coin. The different sides of the same coin.
Literally, because when I was pregnant with my two kids, dad, I feel this. What does this mean? You know, what, you know, da 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 da, you know, all the questions, free consults. But then he always said, you know, he said, make sure you check in with your OB. And then with my kids, if my kids have fevers or any kind, well, I could take care of the rash, but any kind of like the vaccine issues, I just talked to my mom about it. And it's great to have all these in-house doctors.
Yeah, what a delight. I'm sure you have tons of friends who are calling you asking you to text your parents.
Yes, absolutely.
So you were guided to this path of being a physician. So that's like a kid dream, but then you have to make it happen. So you said going to medical school was a little torturous.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I got exposed to specifically to dermatology at the age of 14 because my mom had really bad cystic acne. And at the time, you know, Accutane or isotretinoin was not really in vogue. So she actually, later to find out, we had some family members who were dermatologists up in Canada. So she had to get medication from Canada to help her with her cystic acne. Anyway, fast forward, I went to Wellesley College, all women's college. I thought, like I said, I was going to be a OBGYN because that's what my dad did. And I remember one time I was home with him on a Friday night and we were like sipping some wine and he got called into the ER at 11 p.m. I was like, oh, hell no, this is not for me. And so I said, you know what? I remember that experience that mom had with cystic acne because I went to a dermatology appointment with her and I thought that was kind of interesting. So I decided to go ahead and pursue that. But while I was in my third year of college, I applied for medical school after I took my MCATs and so forth. I actually didn't get into medical school. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. Wait. So let's wait there. Let's pause there. This is a very big deal, right?
Like, it's a big deal.
As a young person who has this ambitious goal and ambitious family members, let's just hang here because
and being African. And the first child, okay?
So this is a while ago. You got this news in the mail, right? You have to open an envelope to find this out. Mm-hmm. Okay. What happened next after you opened that envelope?
So I was distraught, embarrassed. And I remember sitting crunched over in the like the corner of my garage. Like I was outside because I got the news in like outside because you get it from the mail, right? And my dad happened to be home that like Tuesday afternoon. And he's like, why are you crying? What's wrong? And I was like, I didn't get into medical school. Forget it. I don't want to do this anymore. Rah, 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 rah. He's like, you can't give up after just one shot. You know how many times you're going to fail in your life? You know? And I was just like, but no, this sucks. It's so hard. I take this exam. I can't get the school because in MCAT, you have to get a score above X in order for anyone, you know, to be seen. I suck at, you know, standardized exams. He's like, calm down. So at that point, I decided to get an MPH from George Washington to strengthen my application.
Can you tell me what an MPH major?
Oh, sorry. Master's in public health. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I got a master's in public health. I reapplied to medical school and I got in. At that point, Jody, that was my moment that if anybody told me no, I said there is always a yes. I will always find a yes. Because at that point on, I would tell everybody, well, I want to do dermatology. I had this one experience with my mom with cystic acne. She got isotretinoin. She did fabulous. And I want to do that. And everyone was like, dermatology is the hardest field ever. How the hell are you being a Black woman with so-so, you know, like, you know, scores? How are you going to do it? And I was like, I'm going to do it. And I did it.
So how wonderful that your dad was supportive and guiding you, right? But you were worried that you were feeling embarrassed, right? Were you worried that people were going to be judging you or giving you a hard time about that?
Yeah, because I'm being African, right? We're like, we're supposed to, you know, and then also you're the first child. You didn't get into medical school the first time. You're supposed to set an example for the family and, you know, the eldest out of all the cousins. But I could tell you that I'm a God-fearing person. You know, also number two, just perseverance and persistence get you through. As long as you work hard, it's good.
You had a lot of pressure on you.
For sure.
You know, there's a saying that like more will be revealed, right? There's like a reason for everything. Mm-hmm. What would that lesson be?
That you can do anything that you put your mind to. And then also talk to people, because during that time, I was just sharing my story and kind of networking, like low-key networking. And I remember at that time, since I wanted to do derm, I went to a women's college, I tapped into that network. I actually reached out to several alum who were dermatologists and said, this was my passion, this is what happened. And they actually, you know, called the residency program directors on my behalf. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, this is how things happen.
Because you took that action and you stepped outside your comfort zone, those people recognize that you deserve this, mm-hmm. right? Like you're advocating for yourself. So they saw you as necessary to be part of this, right? If you didn't take that action, you know, you didn't use your voice, then no one's going to use it for you. Like you just work for you. Like, you have to do that work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, thank you for putting it so articulately. I didn't think about, you know, I advocated for myself, you know, in that sense. Now that I think back on it, and I always tell my son, who's 15 now, you have to, because he's a sophomore, you have to advocate for yourself. And this is, it's almost like I'm, yeah.
I also have a teen, I have a 17-year-old and a 14-year-old. And we talk about these things. Like, if you want something, no one's going to give it to you. They can't read your mind. And it also is like an inbox full of zillions of things that have nothing to do with you and that are more priorities. You have to take the action, even if you don't get a response. Because you taking these actions puts into the universe like, that you belong here.
Correct.
Right? That you're supposed to be part of it. But if you hold back, then of course you're not supposed to be part of it. You didn't take any action. Mm-hmm. Things don't just happen. You have to make them happen.
Have to make them happen, for sure. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. I'm sure there's a zillion people you've met through your career at this point who didn't get into medical school the first time they applied.
Yeah, who didn't get into medical school, who are trying to get into dermatology, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, what should we do? I get emails. I got an email yesterday from someone who had shadowed me from Rutgers, third-year medical student. She's like, after shadowing you, I've attended several conferences. I really like the way you practice dermatology specifically. You know, how do I get into this competitive field? Mm-hmm. So I haven't responded to her yet because I have to come up construct this for her. But yeah, you know, it's time to pay for it.
So I love asking this question of dermatologists, because there is this like the excitement and money of aesthetics where there's no insurance and people are just paying out of pocket and they get sometimes very immediate results. And then there's the health of skin dermatology. When you were going to medical school, was aesthetics as big a deal as it is now?
I think it was there, but as being a resident, that our program did not focus on that. So it depends on what program you're in, where you are practicing. So I went to SUNY Downstate. I was a chief there with two other chiefs, and we were in the heart of Brooklyn. So we were seeing, luckily, all skin types of all ages all the time, rotating between like 10 different hospitals. And it was all medical derm, primarily surgical dermatology, and very little aesthetics. As a matter of fact, if we had to do aesthetics, we were going to an outside institution to learn aesthetics. And it wasn't until after I graduated that I did like a year fellowship with Dr. David Goldberg And that's when I really got into aesthetics. And over the years, you know, you just craft your training even further.
So in your day-to-day practice, what percentage is skin health versus aesthetic?
So skin health is always 100%. Right? Because we always want to empower our patients about how to take care of your skin from the inside out, and then also from the outside in. And then you add the aesthetics. Because if you only focus on aesthetics and you have crummy skin, it ain't going to look good. So, you know, the two of them have to be, you know, they mesh together. So I'm always telling my patients, like, okay, you should consider these vitamins for your skin or these ingredients for your skin. You should think about these lifestyle tips. Specifically cater to them. And then we add the aesthetic portion, whether it's lasers or microneedling or whatever it is, just so everything is nice and cohesive.
And the reason I ask about skin health is my son, who I mentioned, is a wrestler. Oh. So he spends a lot of time visiting the dermatologist. So those who are listening who don't know, wrestlers get like gross skin diseases. They're diseases, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. They're infections.
Infections. Yeah. And, you know, he'll do his best to, you know, clean his body, like with those wipes right afterwards, or those showers right afterwards, but, you know, they happen. Mm-hmm. So in every wrestling season, like sometimes bi-weekly, it's like we're going to the dermatologist so they can look at it, because there's like dots on the skin. Like to my eye, they kind of all look the same. Mm-hmm. We spend a lot of time as a dermatologist.
Yeah. And it's very common. I always tell my wrestlers, just think about like those protective clothing that you wear, the long sleeves, and that way you're not, it's not skin on skin, and you're not going to get those warts, molluscum, and vitiligo, all that stuff.
So let's shift gears a little bit. So, okay, you have two brands, one with your sisters, one on your own. Yeah. When did you launch the first of the brand?
So my Karité was launched back in 2016 with my sisters, and this is a dry skin using unrefined shea butter. We have women who pick our shea nuts from Ghana, and we mix it with other botanicals to help hydrate the skin, and it's clinically backed. And then just recently in June, I launched my own namesake brand, Dr. Nana Balaji. And again, this is all about maintaining the pH of the skin, reducing trans epidermal water loss while improving hyperpigmentation. So all about skin health and skin maintenance.
So I have some education in shea butter, which is the key ingredient, right? I used to work at L'Occitane and Provence, which is a lovely brand. Mm-hmm. And they would source theirs from Burkina Faso, which I think actually has like a lot of civil wars. So I don't know how, you know, that's really still where they're getting it from. But it's really like a superpower ingredient. Tell me why you chose to focus there.
Yeah, sure. So we use unrefined shea butter. So we have 30% unrefined shea butter in our body cream and then 13% in our hand cream. And what's great about shea butter, it's a fantastic emollient, which has a lot of vitamins as well. And it just, you know, meshes well with other products. And so that's why you always tend to see shea butter in a lot of products, a lot of SKUs. The key is it unrefined versus refined, right? And also the quantity. Is it sprinkled there or is it really there? And so we make sure it's really there because we understand that when you apply it to your skin, it just really helps alleviate that dry skin.
So 100% shea butter is super emollient. It's almost like a Vaseline, right?
Vaseline is considered an occlusive. Right. Uh-huh. And then with shea butter, it's more of an emollient. However, 100% shea butter means that it's not aesthetically pleasing, right? Because you have to melt it in your hand in order to apply it. So we use 30%. And with our 30%, it just melts right in the skin. I mean, every time anyone talks about our body cream and they apply it, they're like, oh, this is so luxe. And that's the experience that we want everyone to have.
So this was your first time entering the product business. So you went to school to be a dermatologist, had lots of training. You didn't go to school to launch product. Mm-hmm. All right, so tell us about that training that you got on the job, literally.
Yeah, so it was interesting. Around 2015, I was doing a lot of patch testing, and I was seeing a lot of contact dermatitis in my practice. And whenever anyone asked me, hey, you know, Dr. B, what would be the alternative? I really wasn't happy with some of the competitors that are on the market right now, just because they're filled with allergens, whether they're fragrance or, you know, a whole bunch of parabens and so forth. They're all, I mean, I guess anything could be allergic, right? Some people are allergic to water, but I wanted something that the whole family could use that was non-toxic and that I felt comfortable giving. And anyone who experienced using our body cream really felt like that. And it also helped alleviate dry skin. So then fast forward, during the pandemic, I helped Naomi Osaka, John Legend, as well as the Wades with their skincare line. making sure that we could find for Naomi Osaka a formulation for a sun care line. And then for the Wades, because of their daughter, finding some formulations that help baby, melanated babies. And then for John Legend, more like a moisturization line for adults.
Okay, wait, I want to press pause here. So what does this mean to help them? Like they dial you on the phone and say, hey, I'm a famous person. Can you help me with my skincare products? Like, what does that look like?
So it's more of a consulting. I was just consulting with them. They wanted someone who worked with melanated patients before, and then who also had a skincare line, and just to give some feedback as to day-to-day, what ingredients are safe for melanated individuals, specifically problem solving, right? So sun care, what would be those key ingredients for Naomi? For a baby, what would be those key ingredients? And then for adults, for moisturization, what would be those key ingredients, knowing the pathophysiology of the skin and so forth.
So is that how a brand can say it's like dermatologist inspired or dermatologist created or dermatologist approved? Is that where they get that type of language?
Yes, the dermatologist, I guess, like formulated, because I help formulate these products with them by advising them.
Mm-hmm. So those are other people's brands, but then you aim to start a second brand for yourself.
Right. So for my patients every day, they're always asking, so Dr. B, what can I use on my skin, you know, for my acne, for this, my eczema? And at least I could say, you know what, with mine, Dr. Non-Align, I know this cleanser is proper pH for your skin. It's between that 4.5 to 5. I know that you're not going to lose water when you use this. Plus, I'm also brightening your skin with these amazing ingredients that are working on this hyperpigmentation pathway. And it was clinically tested on all skin types. And I feel comfortable. And I use it myself. So if I'm using it myself, I feel comfortable selling it to you because it was tested on like sensitive skin. So that's why I created this line.
Okay. So what did you learn with the first one that made it easier for you to launch the second line?
I think just all the back end, just one, stability testing, working with a cosmetic chemist. I work with AJ from Sula Labs. She's a Black chemist. Working with the contract manufacturer. I mean, I literally did everything myself. Obviously, I hired a graphic designer. I hired all these other people just to get my vision into this, these refillable packaging. But I learned a lot from Carrie Tae, and I obviously learned a lot with working with these celebrities that I felt comfortable doing this on my own.
So I just want to be clear. Your full-time job is dermatologist,
yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
So then
and a mom.
And a mom. Okay. So how much time do you focus on two product brands versus seeing patients?
Yeah, it's, I say, you know, and you can see even from, I'll be fully transparent, even from my Instagram for Dr. Nana Beauty, that's where I have the namesake line, I don't spend a lot of time. And so in 2025, I do want to kind of pivot a little bit and spend a little bit more time trying to get the more brand awareness here, because I am dedicated to my patients, and I only have so much bandwidth. Plus, you know, this is all self-funded. So, you know, if I had lots of investor money, hint, hint to anybody who wants to just drop me some money, then I could hire like a CMO and a whole marketing team to just chase, you know, to get more brand awareness. But it's just me. So that's just what it is.
So let's do a little work for the brand right now together. 2025 is around the corner. It's like 25 days away.
Yeah.
In 2025, when you put your energy into marketing your namesake brand, what do you want that end user to remember about your products? Like if they can remember just one thing.
That it's just easy to use. It's easily integratable into anybody's skincare routine. And the wonderful thing is that you could travel with it. And when you travel with it and you're using it consistently, you'll see the results. I think what is happening right now is that everyone's being bombarded on socials with all these brands, and they're constantly changing their routine, and they're not being consistent, and you're not seeing the results that you're going after. So as long as you are consistent with one line, whether it's mine or someone else's, over 3 months, you will see the results.
Okay. This is a symptom of the fact that when people are young people today, if they want to date, they just keep swiping and swiping and swiping. So it's the same thing with product loyalty. It's like, I tried this, I smelled it, it's fine, I don't know, I'll move on. Oh, this texture is fine, whatever, I'll move on, right? Like there's no behavior set in motion in their daily lives and maintain a loyalty for a certain amount of time with a product. You don't have to. So how can you convince them the value of sticking with it?
one, I think there's trust, right, as a dermatologist. And number two, the studies that I performed show it was a 3-month study. Mm-hmm. And those who started at baseline to 3 months, they saw an improvement in their skin tone and the hyperpigmentation. And then also the reviews, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone who's reviewed it loves it. So the fact is, you just got to stick with it. And once you stick with it, you will easily get the refillables because you don't want to change it. Why try something else if it's going to mess up your skin?
Doesn't right. So that's your job in 2025, which is to hold their hand almost like a personal trainer, come back to the gym every other day. We're going to mm-hmm. get there together. It doesn't happen mm-hmm. overnight, mm-hmm. right?
For sure.
Let's go back to dermatology a second, because in the midst of all this, you also opened your own practice.
Yeah. So I opened my practice in 2011, actually. Okay. And I've been in practice, oh my gosh, over 10, 13 years now, I guess.
So you're a business owner times 3 now, plus the consulting for brands. Yeah. That's 4 jobs,
yeah.
right? Because you have to run the business, right? It's your practice. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what I think is so fascinating about doctors, is they probably don't teach you how to run a business in school.
Yeah, they
don't. Which is like an obvious thing to teach at this point. So you have to come up with like, what is your point of view as a practice? Right? What is the point of view of how a patient is greeted, how the insurance works, all this stuff is an SOP, is it needs to be standard operating procedure, right? Just like there is with the things that you do on your skin. So I think you just moved into a new practice or a new space, is that right?
Yes. I have a permanent home now. So we're in right now, and I'm super excited about it.
And what was the process like to find, like, the dream? It's like a dream home, the dream space.
Oh my gosh. I've been looking for 5 years, Jodi. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
so like, what are the top criteria that was so hard to find that you finally found where you are now?
That's a great question. So just to give you guys a little bit of some background, I was practicing in Englewood Cliffs before, so leasing space. And Englewood Cliffs is a great area because it's right over the GW Bridge, but it's super duper expensive. I wanted a home-like feel where there is parking. Remember, we are in New Jersey. We all drive. We want parking spaces. We are not in Manhattan. We do not like to park in the street. We want to pull up into a spot and walk into the building.
And you need to know there's going to be a spot there. You don't have to like drive around in circles looking for a spot.
Correct. So as a result, it just took me some time to find that space. And then plus a space that had good bones, plus a space that had, what is it called? It's like all about location, great visibility, right? Like it's like a walking street. And a place where they were near other doctors. So that way you knew where you were going to. And I found that on Summit Avenue in Hackensack. This is a beautiful like residential / commercial street. It just has this demure feeling, very mindful. it's just when people walk in, they're like, I feel comfortable. My anxiety is down because I'm home. And I feel comfortable to express what's going on over the past month or day with you. And that's just what it is. We wanted a really great experience.
Well, I saw a video of this space on your Instagram, and it must have been a home at some point. So you definitely found that homey feel, right?
Well, interestingly, it was a gastroenterology office that he was retiring. And so we just wanted to bring it from 1990 up to 2024, and we did.
Right, so that means all the countertops used to be Formica. And they probably had like drop ceilings and neon lights.
Correct. And it was so funny when my dad came, he's like, well, you don't need to spend any money here. You know, just move in. All your patients will be fine. I was like, Dad, bro, you know, it's not going to work.
Yeah. I mean, we build a sense of trust with the people around us, but also the things around us, right? The environment, the lighting, the sound, the kindness of the person at the front desk, like all of this adds to, like you said, the experience of the patient and helping them relax.
Correct. Yeah. And so this space just makes it feel comfortable. Patients always come in, they're like, I'll take this and I'll take this and I'll take this. And I'm like, no, this will stay. It'll be here for you next time when you come in. But I'll do the reveal on socials in about another week or so. So you'll get to see what it looks like inside.
Great.
And awesome. You have to come visit.
I would love that. I am a Jersey girl. You know that.
Oh, okay.
Okay, my last question is on the topic of empathy. It's something we talk about quite a bit at Beast Beauty and on the podcast. And I would think that empathy is incredibly important for you with your patients, but also with your team. So can you paint a picture for me about like how empathy actually drives your growth in your own business?
Yeah, so for one, just even advocating for my patient, I'll give you a perfect example. On Thursday afternoon, I had a patient who flew in from California to come see me because we had to remove some lesions or some scar tissue off of her vagina. And after the procedure, she was fine. But what developed, she developed a complication. She developed a hematoma, and it distorted her vagina. So she went to the ER, and that night was my open house. So literally, this happened last week. And she knew the next day was my birthday. So she didn't call me. She just sent a text message through our little system. Very kind of her, but she should have called me. And she got the wrong diagnosis on Thursday night. On Friday morning, I happened to be looking at my email. My team said, so-and-so is in the hospital. I was in a Zoom meeting. I dropped the Zoom meeting, and I drove an hour to go see her. When I got there, she explained what happened and that the doctor said, hey, you know, gave her this diagnosis. And I was like, in less than 24 hours, she could only have either, you know, a hematoma or maybe possible early infection. So I called the doctor, the on-call OB, and we did an exam with her. And they were like, you know, I agree with you, Dr. B. This is the right diagnosis. At that point, she got the right care. Mm-hmm. If I was not there, she would have gotten a whole nother procedure and all this excessive testing that was not necessary. And she was already unhappy with her vagina to begin with. That's why she came to me. But she would have been even more unhappy because she would have had this unnecessary procedure. But what's crazy about this is just that, I'm not answering your question. I apologize. So sorry about being empathetic. I feel bad for patients who don't have a patient advocate in hospitals. Mm-hmm. Because number one is you sit there all day long. You don't know what's going on. Talk about anxiety and the experience. Mm-hmm. It's such a sterile environment, right? And then two, if you don't know the language, how to move tests along, what does the test mean? What are the next steps? It's like a waste. First of all, you're wasting money, right? Because you're just sitting there. And then all this time is going by. And it was just really scary. So I was glad I was there because I was able to talk to doctors, then also talk to her about the next steps, her aftercare, what she needs to do. And I just learned a lot from that experience.
Well, thank you for sharing that. That actually wraps up our interview segment. I know it goes by so quickly. Mm-hmm. But thank you, Dr. Nana Bolacci, for your honest answers. Okay, we have about probably time for like two fan questions.
Yay.
Oh, this is actually a really good question. I'm going to go see Wicked the movie. Should I skip the green paint on my face? Is it bad for me?
Yeah, chemicals. I wouldn't want to put green paint on. Maybe like a mask, you know, but not the green paint on the skin.
Oh, yeah. That would be interesting if people started wearing like mud masks in movies. You know, like the green clay. Mm-hmm. Right, because every like face paint is just going to be chemicals, right?
Yeah, I would say majority mm-hmm. are going to be some form of chemicals, and you never know if you're going to be allergic to it. And then trying to get all that stuff off of your face, ooh, that's a lot of stripping.
Yeah, maybe it's more like cute headbands and like
yes,
cute, like,
hat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, this is maybe getting a little personal, but what laser treatments have you tried yourself that you like?
Sure. So I have tried, obviously, laser hair removal and all the body parts. I have a Fotana laser, which is awesome because, number one, it has two dual lengths. It has the NDAG, which is great for darker skin tones, but then it also has the erbium. And on the erbium piece, I could do like a laser peel. I could use it for my hair. I could use it in other places as well. So it just depends on what I'm trying to target.
With the laser that would peel your skin, what does it do for your hair?
Oh, so on the settings there, mm-hmm. it can help stimulate hair growth as well. Yes. So yeah, it just all depends on the wavelength that we use.
That's so interesting. So can you just dive a little deeper into, there's lasers that are totally fine and safe for darker skin tones, and there's some that are like really, really scary and problematic. Can you just paint a picture for the listeners?
Sure. So with lasers, they're targeting what we call a chromophore. So they're targeting some type of color, or maybe they're targeting water, for instance. And depending on what you're trying to treat, you want to find that specific laser for you. Now, the issue is who is also using, who the provider is, right? Have they worked on darker skin tones? And then I always recommend always do like a little test spot first prior to doing a full treatment. And then I think that's basically it. Yeah. So, but there are lasers that are safe for darker skin tones. Just take it slow.
So the advice
that I've given friends who are not in the industry who are interested in trying some of these aesthetic things out, you know, they might not even know the full language of it, is to, you want to see like patients that this provider has actually worked on, right? You want to see those before and afters, not this idea of a before and after out in the internet world, like who have they actually, what work have they actually done, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, yes. You want to see, yeah, before and afters, not the industry sponsored before and afters. They're actual before and afters. And then also what if they've actually personally have tried the laser too, mm-hmm. right? That just gives you that trust factor that we talked about, you know, especially with like the skincare and the skincare products.
This has been so much fun. I can't believe that 40 something minutes have each by. So I want to thank you so much, Dr. Nana Bowachi, for joining us. This is our 274th episode. So thank you for being a part of our show today.
Thank you for having me. This was a great conversation. I can't wait for you to visit the practice. And thank you to all the fans that joined us as well.
And for our fans, if you'd like this episode, please rate and review. And as always, make sure you're following us on your favorite podcasting platform and Instagram to stay up to date on upcoming episodes. So thank you, everybody.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.